Hey, good morning, my friends. We are up to day 17, Bringing Redemption. And in this chapter, I spoke about what I consider, and I think most people consider, probably the most difficult part of the Torah to read. And that is referring to the Tochacha, the rebuke, when God informs the Jewish people of the, I guess, the dire circumstances or consequences of what will happen to the Jewish people if we fail in our covenant, if we fail to carry out the Torah, the principles, the values of Judaism. And the Tochacha actually appears twice in the Torah, once in chapter 26 of Leviticus and the second in chapter 28 of the book of Deuteronomy. And both of them, if you remember this from hearing them in shul, we read them in an undertone. We're not proud, we're not excited about these parts of the Torah, but they are a part of our reality. And our actions, of course, have consequences, and surely on the national level. Both appearances of the Tochacha remind us, basically, of, you know, life matters, and the stuff, the decisions we make as a nation and as a people have far-reaching consequences. And there's a difference, though, between the two, because the first admonition there contains a silver lining. Thank God, in the middle of the first Tochacha that we read in the book of Leviticus, God says, V'zacharti et briti, and I will remember the covenant that I made with Yaakov, with Jacob, and the covenant I made with Abraham. And it's a very hopeful verse where God tells the Jewish people that no matter how bad things get, He's going to remember us, and He's going to intervene, and we've got this sort of positive source of comfort and hope. But in the rebuke that appears in the book of Deuteronomy, in Sefer Devarim, there's no silver lining. And it's hard to understand this. Like, why does God only offer words of consolation in the first rebuke, in the one in Leviticus, and not the second? And the great Nachmanides, the Ramban, wrote that the two rebukes really refer to the two different exiles that we have experienced as a people. The first exile, which we know was a short one at the hands of the Babylonians, 586 BCE, when they destroyed our first temple, it only lasted 70 years, and God took us out of that exile pretty quickly, you know, relative to Jewish history. But the second exile, the one that we still live within today, which began with the Roman destruction of the second temple in 70 CE, that, of course, is much longer. That was destined to be much longer. And that's why, according to the Ramban, Nachmanides, the second rebuke contains no words of comfort. And we have to take ourselves out of that exile. That's not something that God is going to do on His own. It's something that we have to partner with Hashem to remove ourselves from this exile. I share this because we are living in very special times, because yes, we do live in exile, but we are back in Israel. We have independence, we have sovereignty, we have a modern state of Israel, which has changed so much. It doesn't mean we're not in exile anymore. We are, you know, exile is sort of a state of mind. But the first chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Kook, asked a very simple question. I always wondered this at the Seder. Think about it when you're at your Seder and you get up from the table to open up the door for the prophet Elijah. And Rav Kook asked the question, why do we need to get up and open the door? If Eliyahu HaNavi can somehow figure out how to stay alive all these centuries, that he can figure out a way of squeezing, you know, picking the lock or squeezing through the keyhole, why do we have to get up to let Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet, in at our Seder? Because the next Geula, said Rav Kook, the next redemption will only come if the Jewish people get up and take some action. Elijah represents redemption. Rav Kook is teaching that the next redemption is going to come when the Jewish people take definitive action. And that's probably why Rav Kook himself was such an important part of the return to Israel. He saw the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, even though he was a very orthodox, bearded rabbi, would come to these very secular, sometimes anti-religious kibbutzes and hug these chalutzim, these great pioneers who came to Israel to build the land because, unbeknownst to them, he believed that they were bringing the Mashiach. They were taking a step closer to redemption. They were getting up and opening up the door. And we have to support that project. And that's really what I wanted to share on this chat. Like, it's not only, we're supposed to, of course, yearn for the redemption. It's not in the chapter. I always like to share something on this chat that's not in the chapter. But one of the six questions we're going to be asked after 120, when we're standing before the pearly gates of heaven and we're standing in din and judgment before the Almighty, one of the questions is, Tzipisa liHoshua, did you anticipate the redemption? Did you yearn for a day when the world would be redeemed? And Rav Kook understood that Tzipisa liHoshua is not just did you hope or long, but what did you do? What did we do in our own lives to bring about the redemption, to bring the world closer to the Messianic age. And one way, as you can hear, and many of you who know I'm very passionate about my religious Zionism, and MGE is very much based on this, is being involved in Israel. And even if we're not living there, what are we doing to support our brothers and sisters in Israel to enable this modern secular movement of Zionism to be transformed into a religious, messianic kind of Zionism that Rav Kook aspired to? What are we doing to support that movement? What are we doing to support and help our brothers and sisters in Israel? And on a more metaphysical, personal level, our own Torah and mitzvot, and I put this at the end of the chapter, when we perform a mitzvah, we are commanded to do so to bring purpose and meaning into our own personal lives. But we also keep mitzvot to bring the world closer to redemption. Torah and mitzvot are not just for us. They're not just for the benefit of those performing them, but really for all of humanity. And here you can get into the Kabbalistic tradition that every mitzvah we perform has cosmic ramifications. Everything we do elevates not only our own souls and connects them to our source, but brings the entire world closer to its ultimate purpose, which is redemption. So the next time you do a mitzvah, or the next time you're thinking about doing a mitzvah, not really sure, is it giving me personal meaning? Is it not? Not everything is about me. We do mitzvot also for the sake of humanity, for the sake of the world, because somehow we believe that cosmically, this can bring everyone closer to the ultimate redemption. May it come speedily and soon in our own times. Have a great day.